This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, what to do if you're brand new in the job market. Panasonic has joined what's become a pink slip tsunami, announcing today that they would eliminate thousands of jobs. Last week it was Caterpillar, Kodak, and Boeing. The week before it was Microsoft, Harley-Davidson, and Eaton Corporation. Many of the employees who will walk out of those companies' doors will be experienced workers, people with resumes that may include skills and know-how acquired at several different jobs. But what if your resume is dauntingly brief? You're in your first or second job, you're still finishing college, then what do you do in one of the worst job markets in decades? We scheduled this show after we continued to hear from a number of listeners during other shows in that exact situation, soon-to-be college grads who weren't sure what to do after they got their degree, 20-something workers who may have just started their careers and might be facing a layoff or serious obstacles to moving up in their company. So as we continue our Voices of Economic Experience series, we're focused today on younger employees, and I want to hear from you. If you're in college and you're about to launch a job search, I'd like to hear your strategies and your concerns about getting out there in the job market. If you're in your 20s and you're still trying to move up the career ladder, how's the recession affecting you? Do you worry that what's happening now may leave a lasting imprint on your career? So as I've mentioned, as we continue to do shows about the job market and the recession and the economy, we were hearing from younger listeners who were saying, but what about us? Just about to get out of college, in my 20s, trying to move up the career ladder. And that's what the focus of today's show is. So if you're in that category, in college, about to graduate, in your 20s, trying to look for another job or move up the ladder in the company that you work for, call in today, 800-242-2828. If you're in the metro area, 651-227-6000. If you're online this morning, you can join in that way too, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. The numbers again, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. And if you're listening online this morning, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. Our guest this morning, Lindsay Pollack. She's a career columnist and corporate trainer. She's the author of Getting from College to Career, 90 Things to Do Before You Join the Real World. And she's with me this morning from New York. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Carrie. Good morning.
I wonder if that list of 90 things from your book has grown now that the real world looks a little grim these days.
Yeah, I think it's up to about 90,000 for most students today.
Does an economy like this create, I guess what I think of as a real dog-eat-dog environment for job seekers, where maybe you have to do extra special things to get noticed? Maybe you're willing to take less of a salary than you thought you might. What's the environment out there, would you say?
You know, I think you're exactly right. It's about doing more. It's about acting smarter, faster, and better is a phrase I use a lot. And I would have to say that the biggest feeling that I'm aware of is this sense of frustration and unfairness that for a very, very, very long time, companies were clamoring to hire young talent. And then suddenly, for the class of 2009, nobody's interested anymore, and they have the bad luck of graduating in this economy. So I think it's very understandable to feel frustrated and a little bit angry that, you know, what your goals were all during college may not be possible this year. I think they're very possible in the near future, but this year you might have to make some compromises.
I think that I really sympathize with that too, because you're in college, you're trying to create this major with an eye to what's going to happen when you get out of college, and the thing has turned upside down in the 4 years since you, or 4 or 5 years since you've been in school.
Exactly. And I think that the first thing that students need to do, and I'm speaking directly to college students right now, is to accept that this is the environment and you have to work with what you've got, and it's going to be different this year.
So when you say accept the environment, are you saying don't spend precious time and energy wringing your hands and saying I'll never get a job?
Yeah, what I'm most concerned about with students is the paralysis of, I get a lot of students saying, well, should I just give up? And I think that's never a great option. There are certainly opportunities out there, and they might not be the opportunities that you were hoping for when you graduated and when you, as you mentioned, you know, planned for all 4 years what you wanted. But I just want to say right off the bat, the huge advantage that students have is they have a career services office at their school that is there for the, you know, the specific purpose of helping them find jobs. Nobody else in the job market has that resource. And
how valuable are those?
Well, first of all, I'm astonished at how many kids don't ever go there.
Yeah, I never did either. So how valuable are they?
I think they're incredibly valuable if you use them correctly. So the mistake is to walk in and say, get me a job. The smart way to use career services, if you're a senior, it's too late, but to go in earlier in your college career, preferably freshman or sophomore year, and start to get to know the career services team and the services they offer. So a lot of people used to think of career services as simply placement offices where you dropped a resume and they handed it to the employer. They're much more counseling centers, resume critique and resume prep, mock interviewing, career assessment, testing, and discussion. They offer a lot of services that you would see now from a career coach out in the real world.
Wow.
And so it's not just submit your resume. So I think one of the difficulties is a lot of students who are not interested in corporate jobs assume that career services can't help them. That's absolutely not true. If you want to be an actress, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be an engineer, anything you want, career services can help you with. So I think do not pass go, do not collect $200 until you use that resource that's available as part of your tuition right on your campus.
Lindsay, what's going on with on-campus recruiting? I know there was a time when, you really had a good shot at connecting with some big companies. Is that still the case now, or have companies given up on that?
You know, in some industries, there's still strong campus recruiting. For instance, accounting, consulting are still relatively strong. What you're seeing is a lot of drop-off from certainly any company that's having mass layoffs. Most corporations are no longer recruiting on campus, or I've heard a lot of people say, we're still there, but when we used to recruit, you know, from the levels of 100%, we're now getting about 20% of the jobs to fill, the competition is fierce. However, one of the most important things if you're job hunting is to not just look at the big companies that have the means to recruit on campus. So for students who maybe were a bit non-traditional or didn't want a corporate job, those companies never recruited, and you always had to work through networking and other means of finding a job, which is something that the kids who wanted to work at the big corporations are now discovering.
Lindsay Pollack is with us. And Lindsay, I think we better go to the phones. We have full phone lines here. I want to get as many people in as we can. So if
Great.
You've just tuned in here, we're doing a show this morning really focused on new college graduates, students who are in college and 20-somethings. What do you do in a job market that is the worst that it's been in decades? Now, there is a bright side to this, and we'll talk about that as well. Lindsay will share some ideas about that. But we're asking you to give us your strategies and your concerns. If you're a 20-something, you're trying to move up the career ladder, you're running into obstacles because of what's going on with the recession, this is a show for you. 800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. If you're running into a busy signal, be patient. Call us back or reach us online at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org and click on send a question to Jake in Minneapolis. Jake, you are up first. What's your question?
Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
I live here in Minneapolis, and I was at an advertising agency for almost 2 years. I was laid off about 4 months ago. And it's been, you know, a real struggle finding a new gig somewhere.
Yeah, I'll
bet. In fact, it's been fairly morally deflating. A lot of good conversations with people, but it's just not happening. And so with the economy the way it is and the way it looks like it's going to be possibly getting worse, I've been talking to a lot of people, and I'm considering this myself, but, you know, pursuing, you know, some sort of professional degree or even just another career. And I guess my question maybe to you and your guest is that panicking too much, or is this the perfect time to, you know, decide rather than be in advertising to be a lawyer or to go get an MFA in fiction writing?
Yeah, Jake, Lindsay's been writing about grad school, and what kind of advice are you giving Lindsay about that?
Well, I think it's very smart to consider all of your options, so there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I would definitely do some thinking on the grad school question of whether you're really committed to the career path that that graduate degree would lead to. So if you are using grad school because you're really excited about a new career path, you would probably have considered it pretty seriously, even if the economy were good, and most importantly, you've thought about how you're going to pay back the cost of graduate school. So, of course, I'm going to go right to your mention of an MFA in fiction. You know, is it a way to kill 2 years so you don't have to suffer through job searching, or is it a career path you're really committed to, even if it leaves you significantly in debt afterwards?
I think Jake is still with us, Lindsay, and I'm curious about the answer to that. What would you say about that, Jake?
Well, I guess my concern is, yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, maybe that grad program feels right now like a safe place to weather the storm, and I guess that's very good advice that it should be probably something you would maybe have otherwise wanted to pursue even in a good economy. So.
Lindsay, how about a career choice, though, in a business like advertising where we know advertisers are pulling back? How do you weather this and try to remain in the same field?
A couple of tips on that. Number one is, if you really love advertising and communicating and marketing, I would think very broadly about the different areas that are related and similar to the skills that you would use in advertising. So depending on whether you are client side or creative, is it marketing? Is it public relations? Is it communications? What do you enjoy about that field? And I would cast a very, very wide net. I'd start, you know, jotting down on a piece of paper everything that's related to advertising. If it's necessary to get out of the advertising field and do something else, even if it's working at Starbucks, can you do that for a year or two, make the best of it, make the most of it, and continue networking, building your connections, building your skills in the advertising world, for instance, staying involved with a professional advertising association, continuing to go on informational interviews and build your connections, continuing to read Advertising Age and Ad Week, and keep sort of a hand in the field you want and do what you need to do to survive through this economy. So I think you have a lot of options, but something I want to say to the caller and to anyone, nobody, in my opinion, is going to fault you for what you do to get through this unprecedented economy.
Well, tell me why you think that's important to say.
I think it's so important because, first of all, your first job or second job is not going to make or break your career. We live in such a different world now. It used to be your first job lasted for 30 years. Now there's so much switching. There's so much movement. There's so many mergers and acquisitions and downsizings that to show what you've done to be proactive, to be successful, to make it, is now, I think, going to be more important than saying that you stayed at one company the whole time. So first of all, get rid of that fear that, you know, taking a job that's a little bit lower than you wanted or out of your range, that's going to be okay as long as you keep up your connections and your skill building in the field that you want. So think of your life holistically. It's not just your job. It's all of the other activities and connections and people that exist outside of your job. So to the caller, I would say, you know, cast a very wide net, but think about what you really want to do and how you can have that in your life or in your career, even if it's not with the specific title of advertising.
Let me go back to the phones here to Kevin in Mankato. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good.
This is a perfect, like, discussion for me. I graduated in May from MSU with a political science and philosophy bachelor's, which I was always told the whole time it wasn't going to get me a job, and I kind of knew it, but I thought I'd be able to find something upon graduating, seeing as I had a bachelor's degree, and that definitely didn't happen. So I sort of in a bit of a panic when it got closer and closer to this next semester, I enrolled in a master's program of public administration. Figured it would be a good avenue because sort of banking on Barack Obama being president and adding more government jobs and things like that. But I was also thinking to weather the storm after my master's going into like the Peace Corps. Is that a good idea? Is that a good resume builder? I mean, I've always heard that it is, but is it really? And I guess I'm sort of curious as to what Lindsay has to say about
okay.
that.
Okay, thanks for the call, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. Yes. I think you're right that with President Obama, he's put such an emphasis on service. Peace Corps, City Year, Teach for America, Habitat for Humanity, those 1 to 2 year service programs are extraordinarily popular right now. Two little caveats. One is I would apply early And I would apply very carefully and as well as you can, because the numbers of students and recent grads who are thinking about those service years has skyrocketed.
Mm.
And the second thing I would say is, if you are interested in going into a business career or a government career after that year, I would certainly do everything you can during that year not to fall off the face of the earth, but to keep in touch with people, maybe to blog about your experience.
Oh, good
idea.
Write
about it. But to really make the most of it, and I have the same advice to students who do a study abroad. You know, what can you do to go above and beyond the basics of that program to make sure that when you finish that program, you're going to be able to get the kind of job you want? But if you have the desire to serve, I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think any employer would applaud you for using this time to do that.
Lindsay, that's such great advice, because then I can imagine maybe your social networking with other people that are in the Peace Corps, and you're building contacts for, you know, the years that are ahead. Great idea.
Absolutely. I really encourage it if you have that desire. It's wonderful.
Online here from Braden in Minneapolis, who says, I graduated University of Minnesota Duluth in 2007. I feel fortunate that I don't have a mortgage, kids, car payments as a fresh grad. Can these people afford to wait tables? And I want to note something here that I was reading on MarketWatch. This is kind of the silver lining to this. There was this piece on MarketWatch.com recently that said that this generation, yes, the economy is so terrible and the job market is tough, but that they are in a great position to help President Obama rebuild the economy. And here's the argument. How can a generation without much money rebuild the economy? Precisely because they're starting out. They haven't lost 50% of their nest eggs. They're on a path to accumulate wealth. They don't have a house to sell. They'll be motivated buyers. They're educated, technologically savvy, inspired, driven to succeed personally, but also concerned for the greater good. That's the upside of this, isn't it?
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I have a little beef with a lot of the media that they're constantly talking about this younger generation and how entitled and coddled and not willing to work hard they are. I have just seen the exact opposite. And I think the message in that MarketWatch article and what you're saying is so true. I think if this generation can show their willingness to work hard, their desire to contribute, to be, you know, patriotic Americans, I think that they will be unbeatable as employees, as public servants, as voters, as people who want to change the world. I think this generation has so much potential. And because they've lived through boom times, we haven't seen the gritty, hardworking side of them come out. And I think if you're thinking about waiting tables or working at the Gap or whatever you're going to do, be the best at it. Be the one who does it well. Be the one who also serves the community on the side. You know, I think there's no shame in that. And the hard work ethic that we've seen, you know, in the past in America is something that this generation can really do in a modern way that could be wonderful for them and wonderful for the country. I'm very optimistic.
To the phones, to Tim in Fargo. Hi, Tim. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I have a comment for you and your guest.
Good.
Myself and my wife are college grads. She has two baccalaureates. I have one. We just recently moved to Fargo from Ohio, as Ohio's economy, as mainly industrial-based, specifically the town we were in, really tanked. And we actually put our house for sale before the housing market imploded and moved into an apartment up here because we had work available here.
Uh-huh.
One thing I would recommend to your listeners is one decision we made is when we were moving and having to juggle expenses, we decided to not pay for Cobra as it was going to be almost $650 a month.
So you're living without health insurance, though, Tim?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
And it just seemed like we would be able to find, we had work here in Fargo, and we thought we'd be able to float it until the health insurance kicked in up here because we had some moving time and whatnot. And during the time, I ended up being hospitalized for 5 days for an appendectomy that they couldn't do laparoscopically.
Gosh.
And so now we have $130,000 in debt.
Oh, no, Tim.
Along with our college debt and, you know, a few grand in credit card debt and whatnot. And we're both making, you know, less than $15 an hour.
Boy, that health. Hang on one second, Tim. You've brought up such a great point here. That health insurance part of this, Lindsay, is so tough because those COBRA payments are so high. And yet you run the risk of what happened to Tim happening to you if you go without insurance.
It's a huge national problem that I'm sure we could do a whole hour on specifically. I'm concerned about Tim and his family, and I'm very concerned about students who've always been covered by being in school and being under their parents, and a lot of them are all too willing to give up health insurance because it's expensive and it's a huge concern. It also keeps a lot of people from freelancing or doing work where they're not actually on a full-time salary, and often healthcare is the first to go, and it's a huge concern and something that I think needs to be addressed immediately, particularly in this economy.
So, Tim, how are you emerging from all of this? You're both still employed, though, right?
We're both still employed. Thankfully, we have contacts, so we had family jobs waiting for us, and it's just basically going to be $25 a month paying it off until I'm going back to college, hopefully, once the house sells, and I'll try to get into a higher paying career. And that's probably 3 years down the road. And so hopefully the economy's recovered by then.
Boy, we wish you well, and I appreciate the call. It's kind of a lesson there to consider as you try to make these decisions about moving. By the way, I think I was reading a piece that you wrote, maybe on the ABC News website, where you were writing about some of the things you better consider if you are going to do with what Tim did, pick up and move, go to a new city, some of the ways to prepare for doing something like that. What do you do?
Yes. I think it's a great option to consider right now. And it's interesting, the Dakotas are sort of some of the most popular places to move. I think it's important to consider moving, particularly if you're in a state like Ohio or Michigan, where the outlook is particularly bad, unfortunately. A couple of things. One is, because the economy is so tight right now, employers don't want to hire somebody who's going to be any sort of a problem or pose any sort of a difficulty to take the job. So you want to make it look like you would not be more difficult to hire than somebody local. So to say, you know, no problem, I can be there for any meeting, I can come in for an interview, I have a place to stay. You don't want to put the burden on the company that you need anything in addition to what somebody local would need. And secondly, you want to talk the talk of that location, particularly if you're moving to a place where you've never even been before. You want to start reading their local newspaper, listening to their local radio stations, talking to people who live there, because knowing the local community for a lot of careers is very important. So you don't want to appear to be somebody who would need additional training because you're coming from far away. So do everything you can to make yourself feel like a local even before you live there. Very, very important not to seem like a burden.
Lindsay, what about the idea of saying to the company, if maybe they're balking at the idea of moving you, hey, I'll split the moving expenses with you, you know, or something like that?
I think in any other economy that would be great. Unfortunately, I think in this economy you may have to pay your own moving expenses.
Really?
Unless it's a very high-level job, I don't think a lot of companies, unless you are a phenomenal, unique worker who they need, I think you're going to find it difficult to get your move paid for.
To the phones to Billy in Minneapolis. Hi, Billy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be graduating from the U in May with a degree in political science.
Okay.
And soon after that, I'll be following my girlfriend as she goes off to grad school to a city that I won't know a single person. So I'm kind of resigned to the fact that I'll be tending bars or waiting tables for a little bit. But how do I start the network that'll help me find a job in the new city?
Boy, you're going to be in a good place to network, though, you know, in a bar or a restaurant or something like that. Lindsay, how about that?
Yeah, I think you can even start right now by networking online through LinkedIn.com or even Facebook.com, reaching out to everybody in your existing network and saying, hey, I'm moving to this town. Here's what I'm looking for. Do you know anybody there I could just reach out to and talk to? Not to ask for a specific job as yet, but to say, I'm moving. I'm looking for new friends. I'm looking for new connections. I think you'll get a lot that way by starting now through the internet. And once you get there, you know, one thing I say is say yes to every opportunity. I'm sure your girlfriend will have a lot of social events through school that you might be able to attend. Anywhere you work, I'm sure that they'll go out after work for a coffee or a drink. Anything that you can do to meet people and be open through the gym, through maybe even signing up for a low-cost night class on a topic that interests you, going to free book signings and readings at the local Barnes & Noble. I think just really maybe even setting a challenge for yourself that 3 days a week you will go out to some sort of networking event and being very consistent about it. But don't wait till you get there. Start now online.
If you've just tuned in to Mid-Morning, you're wondering what we're talking about. Lindsay Pollack is with us this morning as we zero in on some advice, concerns, strategies for college students who are about to graduate or 20-somethings who are trying to move up the career ladder in this job market and in this recession. Lindsay, career columnist, corporate trainer, and she's also the author of Getting from College to Career, 90 Things to Do Before You Join the Real World. I'm asking you, our listeners, if you're in this situation, if you're a college soon-to-be graduate or you're in your 20s, and maybe you feel like you're targeted for a layoff at your company, or you're trying to move up to different jobs and you're finding obstacles with what's going on with the recession. We'd like to hear from you this morning, your concerns, your strategy, some of your ideas, maybe some of the things that you've done to get around this. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. If you're still getting a busy signal, call back or get us online here, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question to David in St. Peter. David, you're a college professor, yes?
Correct.
And you're giving advice to your students? What are you telling them?
Well, I tell them first that I'm a survivor of actually two recessions. I graduated high school in 1982, and the unemployment rate back then for people under the ages of 30 was nearly 25%.
Oh, yeah.
And basically that meant there was almost no blue-collar jobs left. I lived in an old industrial town where you could graduate from high school, walk across the street, get a job in the mill, and make $25 an hour. And those jobs basically went away in about 4 years. So that basically meant you had to go to college or join the military if you want to have some type of option. And I chose a college route, and after a long process, I eventually made it and survived. And so I want to tell students that there is light at the end of the tunnel. They just need to be patient in that. And what I tell my students and what they need to do to be prepared for this downturn is that they have to change their what I call habits of mind, that they have to be flexible. They have to be proactive, as your guest had commented. They have to be creative. They have to be introspective. They have to think about, you know, what were they thinking before in terms of a booming economy, and what do they have to change about themselves to deal with an economy that may not be interested in hiring them, even though they are highly talented and hardworking.
What's the reaction from the students when you say things like change your habits of mind? Do they get it?
You know, I started last fall really kind of preparing my – or last two falls ago kind of – tell them, you know, I think that this is coming, it's going to be bad, and they didn't really want to hear it. I think they wanted to believe that this is not going to happen, that's going to go away, and I understand that because, they have lived in a time of plenty, and when it became more apparent this past fall that things were indeed bad, I would say that many of them were either in denial or just outright dismayed at the prospects, and I think some of them were still thinking, well, bad things only happen to other people, but they won't happen to me. And I think for the graduating seniors, I think they're a little bit more aware of just how daunting the task will be.
Right.
And what I tell them is that there are jobs out there, but they're going to have to work a lot harder to get them. And I tell them that perhaps they're not necessarily in this country. I've had a lot of my students go abroad and teach English.
Oh,
in
that's
East
an
Asia.
Idea. Yeah.
I've had students have very successful careers and Teach for America or the Peace Corps. One of the students called in and asked if the Peace Corps is a good resume builder. I say absolutely. Teach for America. There's programs in Chicago, New York. A lot of inner cities are looking for talented young people who want to come and teach in inner city school.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
They offer challenging environments, but I think what it says to an employer is that they did stay proactive, as your guest commented on, and that they were willing to take on challenges that was outside of their comfort zone. And that's what I tell my students. Be willing to take jobs that is outside their comfort zone, or even jobs that they don't like. And I tell students that if you base all your decisions on whether you like something or not, you can get away with in a time of plenty.
Right.
But in an environment like this, they don't have that choice. They have to do what it takes to survive.
Lindsay, how about this? I think this is interesting advice, that you may have to be prepared to do work that you don't necessarily like for a while.
I think it's good advice in the context, and I agree with so much of what the caller is saying. I think it's good advice, and I would add to that, in addition to the state of mind, that we have to really rethink what a career is. A career is not just one straight path in one industry. Nobody really does that so much anymore. So if you can think about this next job, whether it's something you don't like or not, it's a two-year, let's say, commitment, a 1 to 2 year commitment that is going to give you experience, skills, connections, learning, guts, whatever it is that you're going to build from this job. But I think we have to encourage students to think of this as a first step towards other things that they want to build in their lives. And in addition to that, every opportunity is what you make of it. Working behind the counter at McDonald's can be what you make of it. You can meet a lot of people, as you mentioned, with bartending or waiting tables. You can work your way up to manager. You can learn about the advertising process at McDonald's because you want to go into advertising someday. You can join the community service group that goes out and does good work. Anything is what you make of it. And so students need to know that it's okay to take something that doesn't feel like a career path. They can turn it into a career path.
To the phones to Natalie in St. Paul. Hi, Natalie.
Yeah, good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for taking my call this morning.
Sure. What'd you want to tell us?
Well, actually, just dovetailing on your previous caller's comments about the Peace Corps, I work for an organization here in the Twin Cities. It's a nonprofit called Admission Possible.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
And we are an AmeriCorps program, which is directing national service here in the United States to domestic challenges. And the idealism of this Y generation has been so impressive, and I think we've seen the popularity for national service programs grow. And I think we're really looking at the likelihood that more and more recent college graduates are going to be looking to direct those skills to programs like ours through national service that offer both opportunities, in our case, to work with low-income high school students, coaching them as college coaches, but also professional opportunities in the office setting, doing public relations, doing fundraising, event planning.
Natalie,
and these are great experiences that lead on to next jobs, too.
Do you have openings at the moment?
We're recruiting for 60 here in 60 individuals, and we'd love to have recent college grads for the Twin Cities and Milwaukee.
What's the website address?
Sure, it's admission, so it's admissionpossible.org.
All right. Good to have your call.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Admissionpossible.org. To the phones to Emily in St. Paul. Emily, thanks for waiting. Your question or comment for us.
Hi. For taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering, I graduated in December, and I haven't had any luck with finding jobs, and I'm really worried about paying my student loans and losing my health insurance. I lose it in about 5 months. And I was just wondering if you have any advice about that.
Emily, what field are you looking in?
History.
History, okay. Lindsay, how about that?
Can you be more specific about history? Are you looking to teach or to do archiving, library work? What specifically would you like to do?
Well, I started applying for a lot of jobs related to the field, but I haven't had any success, so I've mainly moved down to just jobs at the mall, jobs all over, and a lot of them don't offer health insurance, and they pay about $8 an hour.
I think, you know, circling back to the conversation we had earlier of the dangers of not having health insurance, if that is essential to you, I would not even apply to jobs where you will not have that benefit. I think it's so crucial. So I would certainly limit your search, and many, many places with hourly work do offer health insurance, so that is possible. My first piece of advice would be to cast a very wide net. You may have to venture a little bit away from history, and I also think it would be worthwhile to do a lot of research, a lot of talking to people about what kinds of jobs your skills would apply to. There are freelance jobs through writing associations. The American Society of Journalists and Authors is certainly an area where people would be looking for writers and researchers to work on history books and biographies. That's one suggestion. I would reach out to every single person you have ever met in your entire life, including your family, your friends, your neighbors, anyone in everyone, and say, would you be willing to spend 15, 20 minutes on the phone with me to help me brainstorm some ideas of places that I might work? I would go on LinkedIn.com, which I've mentioned a couple times, and I would type in history, and I would look up the resumes, the profiles of any person on LinkedIn. There are millions and millions of professional profiles. See what kind of places they've worked, see what kind of job titles they've had, see if there are any job listings. I think you need to find out as many places as possible where your skills could be used. Network before you apply for jobs. Talk to people first. And in terms of hourly work to keep you solvent while you're looking for jobs, you know, anything I think would be fine, but I would try to focus on a place that offers you some access to health insurance. Does that sound helpful, or can I be more specific?
Emily, does that help?
Oh,
Good.
Yeah, it is helpful.
All right,
thank
good.
You.
Hey, thanks for the call. We're hearing from someone here online, Lindsay. Gordy in Plainview is writing, for healthy 20-somethings, catastrophic health insurance, it's a $10,000 deductible, is available for about $100 a month. Most can afford that. So if something did happen, it would be a pretty high bill, $10,000, but not the $120,000 that our other listeners incurred when he went in to have his appendix
taken
out.
Yeah, I just want to point out that health insurance is state by state, so I'd be very careful to make sure of what's available in your state.
Here in Minnesota. Okay. To Philip in Minneapolis. Hi, Philip.
Hi there.
What's your situation?
Well, all right. I am 27.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated in 2003 and actually went to school in St. Peter, so maybe I heard from your professor that spoke to earlier. But I was listening to you guys discussing about the idea of never turning down opportunities, and I think that it's kind of important. I know that actually I left a job a couple years ago that I wasn't really crazy about, mostly because I felt that the opportunities that they were giving me were maybe not the kind that I wanted. And looking back in retrospect, maybe there are some things I should have done differently. But at the same time, I realized that if you're not progressing, that doesn't mean that you're stuck. It just maybe means it's not the place for you. And similarly with searching for a job is very similar about if you can't advance in your current job or you can't find a new job, you should try something maybe very radically different.
Yeah.
I ended up going to work for very little money with a friend of mine at kind of a startup type company. We worked in technology, and and we did this whole catastrophic, we call it hit by a bus health insurance, if you will, and keep the worst case out. And you have to take a few risks, but I ended up finding a much better job with a company actually that was very interested in the work that I was doing with a startup company, and we are selling things online and making online business in stores. And I actually found a company in Chicago that does that as their specialization, and they have some pretty big name customers. And that combined with the willingness to travel and the willingness to take that kind of opportunity, I've been able to move ahead. And I mean, you do have to choose the kind of life that, that you want to have, I guess. And that might not always take the form that you think it might expect it to take.
Yeah, Philip, I think it's such a good point. If you can maybe think about those years right after college in your 20s as a time of, some kind of experimentation with your career, because, again, you're not bound often by mortgages, having kids, all the things that you settle into in your 30s and your 40s. Lindsay, how about
that? Yeah, I think that also takes the pressure off. I think some students in college just feel so much pressure to get a fantastic job when they graduate. I think David Brooks of the New York Times called the 20s the Odyssey years, and they call this the Odyssey generation. I think that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
Use this time to explore. I also want to touch on, Philip mentioned startups, and I can sense his positive attitude, which I think is so incredibly important right now, to say yes to opportunities and to be open to something completely different than what you ever expected. Startups, small businesses, micro businesses, medium-sized businesses are often great places to launch a career. I started my career in a four-person nonprofit, and I got tons of experience, probably more so than I would have in a large company.
Was that your first job out of college, Lindsay?
Pardon me?
Was that your first job out of college?
I went to graduate school on a scholarship, so I didn't incur debt. And then after that, I worked at a four-person nonprofit that helped people start businesses. And then after that, I went to a business magazine.
That's great.
But it was a great way to start. And what's interesting that I want to point out to a lot of young people, that four-person nonprofit was never going to recruit on a college campus, and they were never going to advertise on Monster. I found that job through networking, through a family friend. So a lot of these opportunities you have to find through networking. They're looking for young people who are willing to start and do a lot of different things, as Philip mentioned, with the startup company. Those opportunities are out there, but you have to do a lot of extra work to find them through personal networking, through alumni networking of your school, through online networking, and through anything and everything you can possibly do. So there's a huge world out there beyond campus recruiting and the large job sites.
Lindsay, you're in your early 30s, is that right?
Yes, I'm 34.
34. Oh, so how many jobs have you had so far?
I had my job at the nonprofit. I worked at Working Woman magazine, which went out of business during the recession.
Yeah.
Went out of business during the recession right after 9/11. I'm based in New York City. After that, and here's a great point, I was job hunting, and I started freelance writing, and I sort of accidentally started my own business, which I've kept to this day. And that was started in 2002. So a lot of young people, and this isn't for everybody, but the opportunity to be a freelancer or a consultant or an entrepreneur is another career path. Be careful with the insurance, but it's another career path that's possible. And I never thought that's what I would end up doing, but you know, thanks to Working Woman going bankrupt, that's the path I ended up on, and I couldn't be happier.
And you wrote a book, I mean, on top of it.
Yeah. But I also think, you know, a recession or you know, a terrible recession is, again, as we've been saying, it's an opportunity if you stay positive, because so many people are giving up, unfortunately. If you stay positive, that energy, that optimism, that desire to work hard is what employers are looking for right now. And young people really have that advantage of saying, I'll move, I'll go overseas, I'll work till 10 o'clock, whatever you need. Let that show through when you're networking and interviewing, because that's what businesses need right now.
From Jonathan in Hinckley, he says, at my job, layoffs are done by reverse seniority. As someone in my 20s, I'm lowest. No new hiring. It seems like job security will never come. Should he be thinking about job security, or should he maybe flip that around and think of that in a different way?
I think everybody would be wise right now to think about keeping up their professional network, keep going to events, keep your name out there, because you never know. I would also say now is the time in that job to go the extra mile, to show what your contributions are, to ask what more needs to be done so that you're every day showing your value.
To the phones to Sadie in Minneapolis. Hi, Sadie. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh. How old are you?
I am 20 years old.
Okay, your question.
Well, I just wanted to say that right now what I've been doing to make money, instead of finding a job with a business or something like that, I have been trying that for several months now. And what I ended up doing is just offering my service to people in their homes instead of in a business. So what I do is I just do household cleaning for moms and just women who work who don't have time to do stuff like that, or families who don't
have
time for that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I know that people in their 20s don't want to babysit anymore, but babysitting and cleaning and stuff like that, people do need that kind of stuff done sometimes. And it's not only, I mean, I enjoy cleaning, so it's not only good, like, physical labor to do, but you're really helping out families when you offer those kind of services to people.
Good suggestion. Thanks very
much
for the call. We appreciate it. Online here, Lindsay, from David in Minneapolis, who asks, so how does a recent graduate compete with the many unemployed experienced professionals? This is a good question, especially when we're going to see new unemployment numbers that are going higher tomorrow.
Yeah, there was a recent story in MSNBC that the employment rate among young people is raising much more rapidly than others, because older workers who are experienced are willing to take jobs that are beneath their experience level, so they're pushing out the younger workers. I think it's a real concern. I think you have to focus on what you have to offer. So are you incredibly technologically savvy? Is it your energy, your enthusiasm, your willingness to work late and travel? Anything that you can do in your cover letter, in your networking, in your interview to talk about the advantages of your youth and your recent graduate status. You know, if they want someone more experienced, there's nothing you can do about it, but you can talk up the advantages of your age. I would also point out that you can look for jobs that are specifically marked as entry level, because those would be ones that that would be specifically looking for somebody young who's a recent graduate. And I want to point out from Sadie's call, I loved her energy and her willingness to do anything. There's a lot of that kind of work on Craigslist, on alumni websites, on LinkedIn.com, people who just need a little bit of extra help. And I think that's a great way to keep yourself afloat even before you find a first job. And often age doesn't matter at all in those kinds of opportunities.
And let's be honest, you may be networking and you don't even know it. I mean, how do you know the person that you're cleaning the house for doesn't at some point say, hey, you mentioned you have an interest in something. Well, I know somebody that has an opening for that.
Absolutely. Do not be shy. You know, I would tell the guy sitting next to you on the bus, hey, I'm looking for a job. Have you heard of anything?
No, you really would?
Pardon me?
You really would?
I really would. I really
would.
You'd
hit people up on
really
the bus.
Creepy.
I want to let our listeners know that at 10 o'clock, while we're talking about careers this hour, at 10 o'clock, we're talking about careers in science, especially for women. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, there's a push now, believing that there is going to be more interest from the Obama administration on science, that now there is another renewed push here to bring more young women into science and keep them there once they get in. So, Lindsay, that is a field that is going to have openings where they'll be looking to fill some new jobs. So
great. And, you know, if you're not the best science student, they will still need marketers and they will still need salespeople and they will still need administrative staff. So even if you're not going to be working on the actual work of the business, it doesn't mean that there won't be opportunities for you as well. So don't shy away from something just because maybe you didn't get good grades in it in school.
Yeah, good idea. Maybe you didn't get an A in physics. So what?
Right.
That's coming up at 10 o'clock, Women
Great.
In Science. To Jesse in Duluth. Hi, Jesse.
Hi. I actually have a comment and a question.
Sure.
Thanks for taking my call,
uh-huh.
first of all. But my comment is the professor, David, who called in from St. Peter,
yes.
actually my professor at UW-Superior,
uh-huh.
And he was my inspiration to become a teacher. So
really?
Listening,
good,
yeah,
good.
But my question then, during the 07-08 school year, I was teaching full-time in Duluth, and I kept my second job as a bartender and a server because I was so nervous that I was going to get laid off. And inevitably, I did get laid off, and I continued to bartend through the summer and kept looking for another teaching job. And then right before the school year started, I found a 0.5 teaching job, and so I'm working part-time as a teacher and part-time with a grant. But that's probably going to end at the end of this year as well, because the grant expires, and with all the cuts that are going to happen in the district, a 0.5 job will be the first to be eliminated. Mm. So I guess my question is, since I want to continue teaching, I know I have a couple of options. I can go back and get my master's, and my problem there is then my salary demands go up, and I have no tenure and only 2 years of experience. So they would probably hire someone with less experience so they don't have to pay master's salary. With subbing, then it's not a secure income, and finding a secondary job on top of that is really, really difficult. So with wanting to stay networking within the schools, I guess I'm asking what would be probably the best option to do for a job other than subbing while continuing to make progress to keep my license active.
Okay.
I think the master's is not a bad career choice for you because it sounds like you're very committed to teaching as a lifelong career, and in that case, the master's would be valuable. My suggestion for other ways to expand your search would be to look into what the caller mentioned with the college coaching. I would look into Kaplan and Princeton Review to teach test prep. I would look into tutoring types of positions, private school positions, anything related. I think they're called Aspire Career Centers, Kumon Math Centers, Sylvan Learning Centers, and also online teaching. Sometimes you don't need a master's degree to teach in some of the online private programs. So I would look into any area where you get to be working with students and honing your teaching skills, but perhaps more for test prep, which is pretty much a recession-proof business, college essay editing, anything like that that's related to getting kids into schools and programs. There's a lot of opportunities there.
Lindsay, one of the things that I've been wondering about is when you go through an experience like the kind of economy that we're going through here, I wonder if you have thought about whether it leaves kind of a lasting imprint on the you know, the psyches of the people that are just coming out into this who are trying to get a second or third job in this kind of economy. And I was thinking about that because you will still hear people who say, I lived through the Depression or my parents lived through the Depression. And you can, and in some ways, they never got over that. Now, this is not the same, but we are surrounded by some pretty troubling news here.
I would say to all of the listeners and everyone out there, it is what you choose to make of it. It is how you choose to respond to it. So I think that we will have people in 10 years who say, my career never got off the ground. It was ruined because I graduated in 2009.
Yeah.
And you will have people who say, I'm so glad that happened. It drew me in a direction that I never expected. It forced me to work hard and meet people I never would have met before, and I'm so glad it happened. So I think there are still people who are probably bitter that Working Woman magazine went out of business, and I'm able to say, you know what? I'm so glad it happened because now I have a career of my dreams working for myself. So I would say to everyone out there, yes, it is tough, and I have so much sympathy for how tough it is. But if you can get through this and turn it around, it's in your hands the way you decide to react to this situation.
And one last comment here from Mike online, who wonders why we haven't been talking about the military. He says it's a very good option for education and work experience. But there's also a downside to that. You're probably going to be deployed, right?
I think if you choose to join the military, you have to be very comfortable with the fact that you may be sent into combat.
Lindsay, a real pleasure to have you. We heard from so many 20-somethings and college graduates, and we still have full phone lines. So we're going to have to do this again, all right?
Absolutely. I'm really encouraged by the people who called in, and I would say there is so much help out there for people just from this hour and beyond. I just want to encourage people to keep reaching out for help.
Lindsay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Lindsay Pollack is a career columnist, corporate trainer, the author of Getting from College to Career, 90 Things to Do Before You Join the Real World. And apologies to all of you who tried to call in and join the conversation. We didn't get to you. We will do more programming like this. It's part of our Voices of Economic Experience series that we've been running, and you can find some of those shows in our archives. We talked with John Bogle at the beginning of the series. He was talking about the what he believes is a kind of recognition or lack thereof in the upper income echelons and on Wall Street in the financial industry of what enough is. That's the title of his newest book. Bill George came in to join us at the beginning of the series, talked about what's happening in the international economy. Laura Rowley was with us. That was an interesting conversation. She's a financial advice columnist who went to divinity school and teaches religious studies at Seton Hall. So you can find all of those discussions in the mid-morning archives at minnesotapublicradio.org. Now, if you're interested in science, we have an interesting discussion coming up here at 10 o'clock, Women in Science, How to Make Geek Chic Again Among Women. Here's the deal. There are a lot of women who choose to go into fields of science but end up deciding not to stay. There are some ideas about how to get more women to remain in scientific fields and how to recruit more young women to get their education in scientific fields. We'll talk with a science journalist and two scientists about that. That's coming up at 10 o'clock, and I hope we'll hear from some of our listeners in the audience who are women and in the fields of science. I hope you're thinking about joining in at 10 o'clock. Tomorrow morning at 9, executive compensation. President Obama is announcing this morning that he's going to put new restrictions on executive compensation for companies that are taking bailout money. We'll talk about that, but we're also going to broaden the conversation. There was a lot of talk during the campaign about executive compensation overall and some rumblings in Congress that they wanted to do something about that. Bill George and John Bogle talked to us about it during our series on the economy. So we'll talk about that tomorrow morning at 9. That always lights up the phones. So I hope you'll join in to that discussion. And if you have not checked out the mid-morning book page, please do. I'm hearing from listeners who are really excited about the fact that we've got Gwen Ifill on the show on next Monday, on February 9th. She is our Carrie Miller Book Club selection. If you're a member of the club, you're going to be invited to an exclusive online chat with Gwen after the show. Details about how to join it online. This is Mid-Morning.